Hello, welcome to a new episode of Work in Progress. Today we're very, very excited. I think we have a very enlightening conversation that follows us. Simran's going to do a quick introduction.
So we have two very interesting guests with us today. We have Kanak Garg and Neha Vyasu with us. They are the founders of this amazing organization called Brave Spaces. So how we even came to across this organization and y'all was through a conversation I'd had with my cousin, shout out Alea. So we were having a conversation of who next we should get on the podcast, and we're trying to have different conversations about what's happening in our society as a whole. And she had suggested Neha Vyasu and Brave Spaces, and we're so excited we can have this conversation.
And that you guys very kindly agreed to come on board after just a random message. And I mean, we didn't have context, and we've learned a lot in the one time that we've met you. So we really are excited to share this with everybody. So I think let's just hand it over to y'all to give a little introduction about yourselves, and then of course get into Brave Spaces.
Okay. Wow. Introduction about myself. I always find this the most difficult part because I'm like, I don't want to be like one thing and say one thing and like leave out. I am so much
multi-hyphenated.
No, I'm so much more than just, I feel like we as people are constantly like introducing ourselves by the work that we do, by the names that we have, and we're so much more, right?
We put ourselves in boxes.
Yeah, but we're more than the names that we have and the work that we do. So I don't know if I'm going to introduce myself, but I'm going to tell you my name and what I do for a living.
Yeah.
My name is Neha Vyasu, which Simran has already shared. I work as an actor. I work as a clown. I write. I work as a poet, and in the last 2-3 years, I would like to think that I've built a small but significant career as an intimacy professional and a trainer for actors in consent, a consent advocate of sorts. But yeah, mostly I think I love rains. I'm a hopeless romantic. I'm magic.
Love it.
Kanak?
I wish I could just steal everything that Neha said, except like just change, swap names and everything else. I think in my introduction, I'll introduce with my name, which Simran has already shared, but my name is Kanak Garg. My pronouns are she and her. I was born in a small, not small, but yeah, I was born in Jodhpur, and I've been raised in over 12 cities till date. I started working as a fashion model almost 5 years ago. And right before the pandemic, I started auditioning for different shows. Like whatever was coming my way, I was auditioning. So I also became an actor in that process. And I started working on my craft. And while I was exploring acting is when I came across a workshop which was being facilitated by Neha Vyasu. I attended that workshop as a participant. And somewhere around last year, almost a year ago, exactly a year ago, actually.
Exactly.
Exactly a year ago, I decided to join Vyasu's team and train myself to be an intimacy professional with them. And I started working on building Brave Spaces with them.
Thank you for this lovely introduction of both of y'all. I think just going forward from what you said, the first question we wanted to ask is, in simple terms, what does an intimacy coordinator facilitate? Like if you had to explain it, what would you say, you know, you allow for, you do, what, you know, what would it mean for somebody who doesn't have context?
Most simply, an intimacy coordinator is someone who facilitates safer practices on set and choreographs scenes of intimacy. This is sort of the broad definition, right? I would like to believe that intimacy coordinators or anybody who's an intimacy professional, because I feel like there are so many legs to being an intimacy coordinator in India, they are the holders of consent, holders of advocates for boundaries, right? Not just for the cast and the people who are performing, but for your crew. They're people who empower authenticity, aesthetic, right? Consent and efficiency on set. You know, and I think I think the most important thing that the thing that I like to do as an intimacy professional is I like to instill courage on sets. I like to instill and create a space where directors are feeling more empowered to tell stories that they want to, bringing their vision alive in a way that they want to. They feel courageous enough to do difficult things, to do bold things, to do risk things, right? While keeping in mind the comfort and the safety and the consent of the performers. And I think that is what I love doing. I love telling great stories.
Wow.
I think what we came across on your Instagram profile also, and I think you touched upon it briefly, is that you all want to build a culture of consent. So I think that's such a powerful statement. I would love for you all to expand on that. And do you think that even exists in our society today?
Yeah. Given what, you know, little bit background you've shared with us, you know, of your experience, the conversations you've had to have and the differences between, you know, probably doing it elsewhere and then doing it here. So if we could double click on that.
I would love for Kanak to share something about how we're building culture of consent, because a lot of our workshops are led by Kanak. In terms of, you know, having a conversation with people who come and choose to do these workshops. She's also someone, while I'm choreographing on set sometimes or doing a marking rehearsal, Kanak is the one who's sort of managing the entire set outside. She's making sure that we are adhering to closed set protocols. So I would love if Kanak had a few thoughts about it.
So to begin with your question, where you asked whether we have a culture of consent already existing in our country or in our culture, so to speak, I feel like a simple answer would be no. I think consent is just very black and white. The understanding of consent in our culture right now is very black and white, which usually begins from a yes and ends at a no. But ever since I've started working with Neha and dived deeper into the work of consent, I've understood and realized that consent is a spectrum. There's a yes, there's a maybe. There's always, you have to understand what's okay, what's not okay, and where is the yes coming from and where is the no coming from.
And even body language, I think, sometimes.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, body language, prosodies, what are we feeling? Are we really able to gauge if it's a yes or no from the body? Are we also listening to our bodies, ourselves? One of the things that Neha always says in our workshops is that which actually blew my mind off when I was a participant the first time, is that we are the most frequent violators of our own consent.
Wow.
We ourselves. And that led me into thinking that it's really true that I used to never really ask myself before stepping into a space or before doing something or before saying yes to something or before saying
like
no to something.
You don't check in with how you're feeling.
We usually don't check in. With ourselves. And I think nobody really talks about it in our culture, in our education system.
100%. And also, I think something that you said just led me to thinking a conversation we had before about boundaries and barriers. And that was something, honestly, that hit me really hard personally.
Simran's mind, you know, the emoji, your mind is blown. I saw it happen in real life.
I swear, I got chills and it was like a light bulb moment that went out in my mind. But I would love for you all to speak more on that as well.
I think just taking off from what Kanak said, in our culture specifically, growing up, we are always told and taught to care about other people's feelings, right? Ghar mein mehman aa rahe hain, you know, be nice to them,
right?
Your cousin's asking you for something, just share it, you know. If someone's asking, just give it, you know, it's things, right? We are this idea of niceness is instilled so much in us that we often do care about other people's consent and that the fact that we're not, are we making them feel uncomfortable? But when it comes to ourselves, we are rarely asking.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? And then that need to be nice becomes a barrier in us Mm-hmm. About, you know, that doesn't allow us to live our life to the fullest in some ways, right? There's a big difference between nice and kind.
Yeah.
Right? You can be very kind without having to be nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, for sure.
Right? And be kind to yourself. And I think that's what I mean often when I'm talking about barriers and boundaries. Barriers are things that are holding you back from living a wholesome life,
yeah.
Right? Being the human that you are.
Yeah.
Boundaries must empower you,
yeah.
Right? Knowing about your boundaries, knowing, you know, what works for me and what doesn't work for me, and knowing that those boundaries also evolve.
Right.
There's no like a standard set rule about you. It'll change with context. It will change with people. It'll change with situation. I mean, so many ways that it evolves. But being in touch with your body enough to know, okay, now my body thinks this is not, even though in other situations I'm okay with this, in this particular situation, I am not okay.
Mm-hmm.
But where is it coming from? Is it coming from a place of fear?
Right.
Then I think it's a barrier. But is it coming from a place of love for yourself? Then it's a boundary.
Honestly, every time you say it, it
just... Karak, you want to add to that something?
What do you think? I had something on my mind and now I'm just thinking.
I saw that.
I had this little moment. It's also this conditioning as we are growing up, just mm-hmm. to add on to that, that when we are growing up, we are constantly saying ki, matlab, mummy papa ko to nahi boli nahi, matlab, nahi to bolna.
Yeah.
And nahi is also taken as rejection of the other.
Yeah.
Whereas no is just us putting our boundaries.
I think sometimes when you're saying no, it's like, you're disrespecting the other person.
Exactly.
But you're actually respecting yourself.
So that association of no with disrespecting of the other person or rejection, mm-hmm. rejecting the other person is something that's flawed, or that's something that we should really investigate into. That where is that no really coming from?
Mm-hmm.
And for that, one of the most important things I feel is to be in tune with your own selves.
And to understand,
and to be in that constant awareness.
Yeah.
In fact, just yesterday, I'll share an incident with you. Just yesterday, we were in a meeting, we were wrapping up a meeting, and the other person, this person we had met, they were... Of course, because I was the one who had coordinated and had called this person. But I think yesterday I was just not feeling like a hugger.
Right.
I just didn't want a physical interaction.
Right.
But we stood up, and when they were leaving, they of course came to hug me. And I had a little hesitation and I held their hands, but then they hugged. And I was okay with, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But Neha didn't mention any of this. They know. So they didn't say anything at that point. Of course, we had our coffee. We had another meeting after that. And when I was dropping them home, they just got out of the rickshaw and they look at me and they said, Kanak, you know you can say no when you don't want to hug, right?
Mm-hmm.
We advocate for this.
Yeah.
And so for me, every day that I do this work with Vyaso, it's that little volcano. I'm just like, oh, they noticed that I had to say no, but I was so hesitant.
And
so even power takes like an upper hand when it comes to us being able to say no in a certain mm-hmm. situation.
Yeah. I think just talking about that, I think both of us, Koa and I, when we met y'all and we were leaving after that meeting that we had, I think one thing that we both said, that I don't think anyone has ever asked us, can I hug you?
Yeah, I mean, so I guess it's like the societal thing, right? Like a lot of times when you're not a hugger, it's like, oh, you're cold. Or it's like, how can you just give a handshake? Mm-hmm. Especially when, you know, you're excited to meet somebody. Like she said, we've not thought of it. But I think we're sort of tuned in that way that, okay, if you're excited to meet someone the first time, you'll still go hug them. And then I think you had mentioned that day that, oh, can I hug you while we were leaving? And I didn't when I first entered, because obviously. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, now I'm going to think about it.
It was honestly something that when we were just leaving, it was a thing that was in our mind. And we were like, oh my God.
Yeah, because we've all been in that situation like you. Like, I am a hugger, but some days you know, do. So, and you don't think of it that time. You're just like, okay, what is the big deal? But
you know, the funny story, I used to be this person who would force people to hug. Yeah, literally, I was that person who would tell my friends, listen, you can't not hug. How do you not know how to hug?
Yeah.
And a lot of, like, I have like two or three guy friends who just look at me and like, really, you forced us to hug, right? Like, because I used to think it's a cool thing. Like, it's breaking someone's, like,
and you're getting closer and, like, you're to getting them. Closer
and it's so you're showing your love and appreciation and for a person.
But I'm a hugger and I want to hug you because I love you. And because, you know, it was instilled in me that, you know, hugging is like a way to show love.
Yeah.
But not hugging a person who doesn't want to be hugged is a bigger way to show love.
100%.
Right? And for me, that has been a journey. And a lot of that journey has happened with the work that I do and the training that I do. Like, I train, one of the times, like the first time I really actively started thinking about this is, there's a profile on Instagram called Consent Wizardry, Mia Kshetar, and I did their class. And that was the first time, it was just like that moment where I'm like, yeah, it's not okay.
Yeah.
And then, like, I started saying, oh, there were days. I've read this book, Roxane Gay's book called Hunger.
Right.
I'm a big fan of, I will keep quoting these people because I just love them.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, my work with IDC, all of it, like repeated, you know, reminder that if you really want to bring consent into culture, you have to empower the no.
Yeah.
You have to make the no a positive.
Yeah. 100%.
You have to, right now, like if there's like a little power scale, the no is like everyone wants to stamp on the no.
Yeah.
Right? Like everyone like, no kaise bol
gaya?
How can you? How can you? Tum mere saath aisa kaise kar sakte ho? It's that moment, right?
And so much offense is taken.
Yeah. That's because repeatedly growing up, we have been conditioned to think that the no is a rejection.
Yeah.
Right? But it's about changing that culture. So like when we do an exercise in the workshop and we start with like yes and no, often the first step is always when you say no, after that say thank you for asking.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly you're giving a power and you're appreciating someone because they asked. And that makes the no a little more valuable.
Yeah.
No.
So there are these tiny tools and tiny practices that we need to start embedding that that then like spread like ripples. Like the little, can I hug you?
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say, that I'm sure, you know, this just here, we built a brave space.
Yeah,
exactly. In that 100%, way, 100%. That evening, I mean, because you took notice of it.
That's the first thing when we sat and I was like, first, I was like, oops, like, I didn't think of it because when I came in, I just hugged. And then I was like, oh, wait, you know, that was, I felt so nice when you asked that. And then it struck me that, yes, I can and I should do this, you know. And if I'm not okay, I can tell somebody or, you know, just be like, okay, it's not fine.
And often, you know, I've also recognized the fact that I do this when I say, can I hug you? Or there are people who don't know how to articulate that. So they're scared of hugging me. I am a big hugger.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like most days I want to hug people, right? Yeah. So very rarely will I actively say no to a hug. But when people can't articulate it, sometimes when I know they need a hug or they're feeling, or I feel, I will ask, do you want a hug?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's just that. Yeah. Letting them know that, you know, I notice the way your body moves.
Yeah.
But you have to articulate it and ask it.
Yeah.
Right? The other way would be to just go hug them because I know or I assume. But I don't know how much of that is an assumption.
Fair enough.
So really like articulating and verbalizing and communicating and clarifying, I think that will build a culture of consent.
How do you think... just before we move on, how do you think that you can, now that you've brought up articulation, when we are talking about boundaries, we're talking about how to establish them. Like you said, sometimes it's hard. For me personally, it's hard to establish a boundary, for me to say something. So like, what would you say to someone like me who has a hard time doing that? Like how to get past that and, you know, actually articulate how I'm feeling? Is there something?
So I think first thing is about... a surety about your boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
right? Like, is this really truly my boundary, or is it something that's just a discomfort that is holding me back from something, right? Once that surety about your boundary comes, right? And there are different ways to do it. It's about like investigating, questioning why you behave certain ways. Therapy, big advocate of therapy. But I think the one way I started articulating a lot is speaking with an eye. I remember my first class with IDC, and everybody said that speak from an eye.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
It simply means that whenever you address something, start with an eye. Instead of saying, you make me feel like this, say, I feel like this in so-and-so situations. Could you help me out? Right?
Got it.
Often we put the onus of regulating our boundaries on the other person. Can you please not hug me? Versus, I'm not feeling like a hugger today.
Yeah, that makes a world of a difference.
It's that. If you start from, as soon as you make it about the other person, right? Like, or an action that the other person is leading, then it becomes a little, the tone becomes accusatory, yeah, because we're not used. You start from an eye. I am not feeling like a hugger today. That's exactly what I told Kanak.
Yeah.
Or saying, you know, I don't think today I am feeling like I have the space to have this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Often, like, I'm someone, if someone's done, you know, my workshop and I rarely ignore calls. Like, if someone's done my workshop and, you know, we're a part of a tribe, I really believe that this is the community and we. But there are days when I actually say that, you know, I don't have space for this today, but do you think I can get back to you in 12 hours?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then it's not about you, please don't talk to me today. Yeah. You don't talk to me today.
Yeah.
It's about
baad mein karte hain. Rather than, I am not feeling that space. So really, I think the articulation is speak from an eye, right? And the second thing I often say is that when you're not sure of something, I say, you know, I'm speaking in draft, or I could be wrong, but can you, right? But that I could be wrong shouldn't become like a go-to line, right?
Yeah.
Because this everything is a balance, right?
Yeah. Like, and you can't then abuse it.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's about finding that balance with you.
Fair.
Yeah. What and we know, yaar, we are human.
Yeah, yeah.
We have a vagus nerve, right? We know this.
Yeah.
If we tell ourselves that we don't know, we are just not investigating hard enough.
Yeah.
That's what I believe. Like, I really think that we know.
No, what you said right now really, like, I think puts a lot of things into perspective.
And it's like a simple, you know, a lot of times I is associated with like being selfish, but here it's so, I wouldn't say, I don't know, it's not empowering, but it's so considerate and compassionate in the way it's articulated, right? A lot of times you think if you keep saying I, it's like I'm putting myself first, but you're not doing that. You're actually making the other person feel like, hey, you know what? It's not you. It's me. Yeah. But in the best way possible.
Oh, that's going to be like...
Yeah. Not in the way we know it.
Yeah. No, I also think that, you know, the thing that we, you know, Kanak mentioned, prosody matters a lot. Prosody is basically the sounds that you make or the way you modulate.
Right.
Your
voice.
Voice, the way you like, what words are you stressing? That matters a lot. And I think that gives you so many cues. And if you say it with the right intent, people will get it. And I also think it's not wrong to be selfish. I mean, whoever decided to tell the world that being selfish is wrong, I'm going to have a fight with
them. There's this movie called The Other Woman. And Nicki Minaj's character says this. And she says this quote, selfish people live longer. And I felt that just spoke to me so much. I was like, done being I should be selfish. That quote just, and I started saying it so much. Komal must be knowing.
My father always taught me this growing up. And I think that's what sort of made me make peace with being selfish sometimes. My father always says ki, unless you are happy, nobody around you will be
happy. And if you give your power of happiness to someone else,
then you won't be happy, and then you won't be happy, and then it's like a cycle. So you have to learn to find your happiness within you, and to be able to, have people around you happy and cheerful, first be happy yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And if that comes at the cost of connection with someone, take that cost.
Yeah.
It's okay. So I think a lot of it is to do with the way I was brought up, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
My father's also this person who'll be like, there are no bad people, just bad circumstances.
Yeah.
Right? And that has something that I always share, and is compassion over empathy. Right? Empathy is when you are putting yourself in, someone else's shoes, mm-hmm. and you're feeling bad for them. You're really feeling everything you're mm-hmm. feeling. Versus compassion, you understand where they're at, and you're willing to hold space for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think empathy is also, when you start empathizing with someone, you're making them equally responsible for your emotions at that time.
Right.
Right? You're making them feel, the focus from how they are feeling will also shift
to the conversation.
And you say, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I can't believe, like, I'm so sorry. And versus, I hear you.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry this is happening to you. Let's talk more about it.
Yeah.
That's holding space.
Mm-hmm.
Compassion over empathy, which we don't really learn. We always say, being empathetic is so great.
Hmm.
And it's great. Yes, be empathetic. But know where to bring in compassion and where to bring in empathy.
Yeah.
I think that's very, very important.
Absolutely.
I think on social media, we see so much like a calling card. I'm an empath.
I just thought of the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
My Twitter at one point, it was like a meme.
Yeah. The empaths, sapiosexuals, what else? There are like these terms that...
I am just full
of, like... I had this little thing, like in the lockdown, I had so many people, like I saw so many people reaching out and saying, if you need help, please reach out to my DMs. I said, no, you're not qualified.
I think that needs to be said.
I was like, no, you're not a mental health professional. Please don't tell people to reach out to you. You're not going to be able to handle that.
And being an empath is not the only
thing. Yeah, like, no, I get it. Like, I don't know. Like, I saw some ad of some... I don't even remember the name. I wish I remember the name because I totally called them out. But there was like someone who had written out that, we will do a listening session for like 200 rupees an hour or like 300. Mm. And I'm like, really? Like, who are you?
Yeah.
Who are you? Why are you holding a listening session?
And why should I come and be? Yeah. You should listen to
me. And you're asking me to pay. You're not qualified therapist. Like, what? I think this like whole... I have
No, I think it needs to be said, like Ko said, it's just like I'm an empath, I'm a this, I'm a that.
No, I really feel deeply everything. If you're feeling everything that everyone's feeling, then where is the space for your own feelings? Imagine the number of people you are causing to go to therapy because you're not going to therapy because you think you're just an empath.
I think this was just iconic. Iconic.
I want to tell them, hello, you need help. You're going to include that, right?
We are going to.
Thanks for saying what we all were thinking.
Yeah, basically.
Oh my God, I'm an empath. I feel so deeply. Please feel.
Don't charge me for it.
And don't wear it as a badge.
Like, it's absolutely not. Like, learn to regulate it. Like, it's basic. Every time you cry, I cry. Great. But if I'm crying to you, I don't want you to cry to me.
Then I end up taking care of you.
But that is actually what happens so many times when there are people like, and they're like, oh, we're oversensitive, we're over, we, like you said, feel everything. And yeah, then a lot of times you end up consoling them versus, which is hilarious. Yeah.
But it's this, right? Like, I learned that, you know, like how there's IQ, there's also EQ.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's highly sensitive persons. There's like extremely sensitive persons. And my therapist once told me that you're extremely sensitive as a person. But does that mean that I have to have that meter on all the time? Mm. And use that as an excuse to not hold space for people? No.
Yeah.
It's in my acting practice, we have this thing called SARE.
Mm-hmm.
Which is stimuli, affectability, response, and expression. Right? Stimuli is what is
coming at you.
Affectability is how are you getting affected by it?
Mm-hmm.
R is how are you responding to it? How's your body responding to it? And E is how you're expressing it.
Wow.
So that E is in your control, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you learn to regulate.
Yeah.
And it's so important.
I mean, and this is across, like, I mean, it's across every environment you're in, right? I mean, we deal with it all the time. Like, even with work, even with whatever, a lot of times you think, or you'll just react on the stimuli. But like you said, you process it and then it's in your hands how you want to express it.
Yeah.
You don't have to always just either sensitive or not or whatever. You have the power to... you know, do that, which I think a lot of times, exactly. It's very powerful.
Unless and until you're neurodivergent. And then there are different ways and tools, right? If you're neurotypical, you have that power.
Right.
I think most people don't really think about it like that.
Yeah.
And while this must be something you've learned at, like in your acting practice, I feel like it's applicable throughout life.
Yeah, 100%. No, for sure.
Like, I think for me, the biggest learning was I had Clowns Without Borders India is an organization that provides psychosocial aid to children in distress situations. And with Clowns Without Borders India and Clowns Without Borders UK, I had gone to the Rohingya camps in Bangladesh, Cox's Bazar, to perform as a clown. And the first time I went there, there were thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
They're living in refugee camps, right? And I go there, I go from a hotel, I go, I perform, I come back. And the first day I came back, I was so overwhelmed with that feeling that I just spent 2 hours crying.
Mm-hmm.
And I called one of my really, really dear friends and I said, I don't know if I can do this because I'm feeling so much. And I am, and he said to me that you're not there to feel their feelings.
Yeah.
You're there to alleviate their pain. So know why you're there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if you had felt that and taken that with you, then maybe that experience
then
wouldn't have been the same.
Then how do I go back to performing the second day at the second campsite?
Yeah. No, for sure.
Wow.
And we learn this as an artist repeatedly, right?
Yeah.
As artists who work in either distress areas or artists, you know, who are building a character. This idea of artists like... early idea ki kya what was that dard se art banta hai, you know, like
torture
and whatever, right? And that glorification of trauma is so high in our culture that we forget to choose love, we forget to choose happiness. And that's a big part of distinguishing boundaries and barriers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Choosing your own happiness.
Yeah.
I think even though it's so simple, the answer, it needs to be drilled in.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a practice.
It is.
Yeah. It's a practice.
It's a practice. I've been doing it for over a year. And yes, it was yesterday that I couldn't say a no to someone.
But
it's a practice.
Yeah. But, you know, like doubling down on what you said, compassion over empathy, like there were... There are three statements, okay, that I'm going to say, which we obviously got from Brave Spaces: holding accountable without shaming, allowance for mistakes, and intent over intention. And we just wanted
impact over intention.
Oh, okay. my bad. I will repeat them again.
It's not your bad. It's just a communication.
Yeah. So, I mean, when we read it, obviously they all are very, very powerful statements. And I think we both felt something, but we wanted to, you know, hear or double down on it from you guys. Like, I'm assuming these are the founding values, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, a little bit on how and why you all articulated it on, you know, in that regard.
Yeah, I could. So all of this, like the statements were very new to me too, mm-hmm. when I just started working around it. And as we started delving deeper into it, and we thought of how do we really define brave spaces? What is brave spaces? What are we really trying to build here in this process? We realized that there has to be like a core value system,
yeah.
just like a vision, mission,
yeah.
most organizations that they have. So yeah. we thought, for our community, what is it that holds most dear and most valuable to our value system? And yeah, in that process, we felt this thing, this need. So what usually happens is ki, par maine to aisa nahi kaha tha. Mera to irada ye nahi tha karne
ka. That was not my intention.
That was not my intention. Which is fair, वो आपका इरादा नहीं था करने का, पर मुझे ऐसा लगा ना, आपने ऐसा बोला और वो मुझे ऐसे इम्पैक्ट हुआ, क्योंकि हो सकता है मेरा कुछ पुराना ट्रॉमा है या किसी बात से मुझे कुछ ट्रिगर हो गया है. इट कुड बी एनी थिंग, राइट? दैट इज जस्ट इम्पैक्ट ओवर इंटेंशन. एंड देन यू एक्नॉलेज दैट, ओके, यू नो, इट वॉज नॉट माई इंटेंशन, बट आई एम सॉरी दैट यू फेल्ट दैट वे. एंड इन दैट way, we are sort of creating a space where you can be brave enough, courageous enough to be vulnerable, to let the other person know that, you know what, this is how something that you've done has impacted me. And that sort of leads on to holding you know, someone accountable
without shame,
without shaming them.
Yeah.
Because constantly, like growing up in my household, and I think that's a conditioning that I'm finding very difficult to break, and I am working on it, but I think I'm doing a fairly good job. I would like to just pat my back for that. But growing up, like something as simple as doodh ka ubal jana kitchen mein. Yaar ho jata hai yaar, kabhi kabhi gas sim hota hai par doodh ubal jata hai.
Yeah.
And it's just such a pain point na, ki mujhe itna khauf hai, I don't want to boil my milk because I'm just so scared of boiling milk. कि अभी वो अगर मैं छोड़ के गई और किचन में उबल जाएगा तो in my head, like, you know, my mother's just going to get really mad.
The reactions of people
around
you.
Because she would shame me for it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course she's come from her own conditioning and I'm compassionate towards her. I understand ki maybe she's gone through all of that. So those little things that how do you hold someone accountable ki haan ye galti hui hai, but you're not shaming them. It's not and I think that is also somewhere where how we constantly keep feel apologetic because
about
we
it,
feel yeah. that are humne galat kar diya karne
yeah,
se pehle
yeah.
we are just so fearful of doing yeah. something
and
or
apologizing
yeah, yeah and we constantly keep apologizing
yeah.
So to do away with that, I think to have a space where we can let people know and, you know, ki, no, it's okay. Like just now, it's okay that you use guys.
Yeah.
But we are letting you know that, you know, this is a little change we can do in our vocabulary, bringing gender neutral vocabulary in our day-to-day conversations. So, yeah.
I also think a big part of all of this is the idea that, you know, why do we say brave space and not safe space?
Yeah. Yes.
Right?
That's what we wanted to ask, actually. Like, is brave space and safe space synonymous, or do you think there's a difference?
No, actually, I think what happens is whenever we say safe space, right? Oh, this is a safe space. You are taking the ownership of someone's safety.
Right.
And I, as an individual, I don't think I am equipped enough to take ownership of someone's safety in any space. And the same way, no person should have the ownership of their safety on someone else. My safety should be in my hands. However, I can do with the space is I can create a space that allows you to advocate for yourself, you know, openly and bravely.
Right.
And therefore, it becomes a brave space,
right?
A space that is designed to make you feel more comfortable. So, for example, when we start our workshops, we try to do a little brave spaces agreement within the workshop. Because what really makes you feel brave, what makes you feel brave could be different, right? And a starting point of us creating has to be, what is it that makes us feel brave? or safe in that matter, or comfortable, right? And if something goes wrong, does that mean the space becomes unsafe? Yeah, if something goes wrong, then the safe spaces doesn't stand anymore, right? But if something goes wrong, brave spaces can still stand.
Yeah.
By addressing what went wrong, right? Mm-hmm. This cancel culture that is like growing by anybody says something wrong, let's cancel them. Yeah. They are bad people. No, we're nice, kind people who end up sometimes saying the wrong things or doing the wrong things. So do you keep canceling people? Then how do we learn? How do we grow?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If cishets are supposed to put in the emotional labor of working, you tell them to put in the emotional labor. And then when they come back to clarify something and you tell them, oh my God, you got this wrong. You're a bad person. They're never going to try and ask you again.
Yeah.
That builds that fear of like asking questions or like even making a mistake and like being open with each other about what they're feeling.
Because how do most oppressive systems control us? Shame.
Yeah.
Guilt. Taking your choice away. Taking your freedom away. Instilling fear in you. These are the things how oppressive systems... Cancel culture is becoming an oppressive system in itself.
Yeah.
Right?
It's becoming a mockery of itself. It's, you know, I mean...
Yeah.
I, that's why I really appreciated when you mentioned that last time when we spoke about the fact that you don't believe in it and that you are like, yeah, okay, I challenge you to cancel me and I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Please cancel me. I'm waiting.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for someone to cancel me and then say, okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that I hurt you. And I'm sorry that whatever I said or whatever I did has impacted you in some way. But I'm willing to learn. And I promise you, give me that chance. I will come back. I will learn and I will be better. And I have done that repeatedly in my life.
Yeah.
The person I am today is an evolution of like all the people I've met, all the experiences I've had, all the things I've learned.
Yeah.
I've not been perfect. I have done... I'm sure I've done horrible things. I'm sure I've hurt people because I am human.
Exactly.
We tend to do that, right? But it's about every day we try to be better people.
Yeah.
Right? And we hold compassion for even perpetrators. For people who've hurt you. Right? Because they come from somewhere.
Yeah.
You don't have to forgive them, but you have to let go.
Yeah.
Because if you keep holding on to it, then you're also not going to move forward either.
So I think a big part of Brave Spaces is that space of communicating, right? One of the things that we recently shared and we're working on like sharing that as a way of, you know, engaging is clarify, communicate, create. Right? Every space, if we just agree to clarify things that we are assuming.
Yeah.
Right? Communicate if something is, you know, not feeling right. And then go on to create something new.
Yeah.
Imagine how cool that'll be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? It's so much better than saying, you are a bad person. You shouldn't be doing this at all.
Exactly.
I think just that you can, like you said, you can hold people accountable without like canceling them from existence. Then if you cancel them, then they might not even have the willingness to learn and evolve and grow from that situation.
Exactly. I think I've had people, you know, I've had people who have like just, you know, said something that seemed offensive and asked them, why would you think so? Okay, can you clarify that for me? And sometimes when they're talking to themselves and clarifying it, they know that this is not okay.
The light bulb just goes off in their head.
Like for the long, and it's like this, right? Nobody is perfect. Every clique, every community that forms is good, has the potential to harm people, right? I was often, repeatedly, I was told, oh, you're too femme to be queer. You know? Or the way I present is not queer enough. Or so do I cancel every single person who said that to me? That would be a lot of people. No. I understand where they come from. And I say maybe that set of people is not open to a conversation with me about this.
Yeah.
I'm going to let that pass. And maybe someday they'll learn. Like I learned when I said something wrong someday. And it'll circle back.
Yeah.
That's quite powerful.
I mean, it's like something we spoke about in terms of even having conversations. Like a lot of times you talk at each other in these situations. You don't talk to build things. And when I read that, I was like, it's so true for everything, right? Like a lot of, it could be whatever reason you might want to prove yourself, right? You might, you know, just hold your ground. But what's the point, right? If you're not building that, whether it's a conversation, a movement, a feeling, whatever it might be. But if you come with that approach, then I think for me, it's helped a lot. You know, it's not about what I think. It's about, okay, what are we getting at here? Yeah. And then it allows you to sort of take that space. Something we actually discussed when you were not there last time, but you might excite you, is when we asked Kanak about the future of Brave Spaces. And I think somewhere when she was speaking, Brené Brown just came to my mind because I love the entire conversation. Like I saw her talk on shame like we have this best friend. She was going through a hard time. So I gifted her the book. I forget the name recently that she published and it helped her a lot. And I was saying that, you know, the way they speak about like vulnerability and courage and connection and all of that just reminds me of you guys, of you folks. And I really feel like that's, I mean, not that you need to have a benchmark, but I think that as a movement or as a space or as a culture, that's where, you know, this would be going.
I'd like to say that, you know, just to credit Brené Brown with that work is slightly lopsided because there are some really, really important people. I think for me, like my biggest inspiration in a lot of the work has been Roxane Gay.
Right.
You know, her book, Bad Feminist Essays.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Not That Bad.
Yeah.
I feel like disproportionate value is given to white women, which is not wrong. Yes, they're doing great work. But I think we also need to expand the artists and the authors we're reading, right? And I love Brené Brown.
Yeah.
Okay. I have, you know, heard her TED Talks and I've read books. I gift those books. But I do feel like even like in India, how many people really talk about Yashika Dutt, right? Coming out as Dalit.
Yeah.
So I feel like when we create these movements are created by a lot of marginalized genders and people from like marginalized communities, and we need to start like
acknowledging
their work.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You know, the spaces and the conversations that they have started. If you start talking about vulnerability and if you start talking about the feminist movement, if you start talking about, you know, some of these ideas of what womanhood and masculinity and femininity, it'll go back to trans activists.
Yeah.
Right? In India, a lot of questions on identity will go to the Dalit community. Right? So I think I love that we're all, you know, talking about these topics, but we need to actively expand our reading horizons. I would love to share a book list and
absolutely,
you all could like put it up.
No, for sure. Like that would like you said, I think so many things also, conversations are happening surrounding books and the importance of books and people removing things from books, from history. So like talking about the voices that you have spoken about.
Again, see, that's fear.
Yeah.
You're so scared that someone will learn something and point out to you. You're scared of being cancelled practically.
Yeah.
So you're changing an entire ecosystem in your favor.
Yeah.
Right?
Which is scary.
And which is scary. That's what the fear of cancel culture brings.
Yeah.
People shutting down other people. We shut down communication if we advocate cancel culture. But yeah, I feel very strongly about people omitting things from books.
Yeah,
I just want to say, I think it's wrong. I don't want to cancel you, but it's wrong.
Yeah, we were quite shocked when we,
we were hearing these things, even about books in general. I know we are veering a little off topic, but like when we are seeing that people were changing scripts, Roald Dahl books. Like, I feel like these can be teaching moments. You don't need to, like, completely erase history or, like, change things. We can have a teachable moment with things.
Yeah. We can talk about evolution. Like, imagine how much we've evolved now. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. But no. Let's cancel. Let's be cancelers.
But I know, I think Kova's touching upon it a bit, but like Brave Spaces right now is mostly in the entertainment space, we can say. Like, do y'all see yourself moving forward? Eventually. I feel like this conversation itself with both of us has been so empowering. So like, do you want to venture maybe to corporations or schools, or like, is there any thought process in terms of the future?
So I think Kanak and I often talk about this, and I think one of the things that Kanak has shared how she's really passionate about is educating on consent in schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And colleges. And we're hoping that, you know, we start expanding our curriculum. We're also training again and again, going to different spaces, you know, strengthening our curriculum so that we can, for me, for example, I was having a conversation with a friend who's a parent, and she mentioned that it would be so nice in the Indian culture for us to tell parents how to uphold the consent of their children, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's sometimes the parent wants to say something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, there is a dur ka uncle who has come and hugged your child and the child is uncomfortable,
right,
and you want to tell
that
uncle that please don't touch my child is, but how do you do that?
Now that you said that, it just like popped. Something very recently happened with Preeti Zinta, if y'all had seen online. There was one of her, she was with her kids and they were playing in a garden. And one of her fans just came up, picked up her child. She said, please don't pick up my child. Can you please keep the child down? And instead of keeping the child down, they kissed the child on the lips and then they went away. And she was like, in that moment, I was so shocked. I didn't know
what to say.
Yeah. I didn't know what to say. I was so shocked about my child. Like, I just wanted to make sure he or she was safe. I'm not sure. But they were safe. And so I didn't say anything. And she was like, now I'm saying something. But that experience in itself, I said no. The person didn't uphold that no, didn't respect that no, and then did something even worse and walked away.
But that's the thing, because it's like a generational trauma, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a generational, for generations, we have not known how to advocate for consent.
Yeah.
So it has to change at the parenting level first.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It has to change at the level where parents learn, how do I set an example for my child that their consent is important?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of curriculum we are aiming at, right? Actual curriculum that brings about these little ripples of change, right? In corporates, right? Like having conversations with bosses.
Absolutely.
Right? You have middle-level managers. How does a mid-level manager uphold the consent of their junior managers?
Yeah.
Right? How does HR uphold consent of their employees against the management?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
For the management. Like, I feel like those modules are important, right?
They're so needed. I mean, it's a calling cry for action. Like, it's needed.
I think, like y'all said in the start, that consent, the way people think about it, is so black and white. And I feel like that perpetrates through, like, in corporate
everywhere
culture as well.
And school especially. I mean, we didn't have the tools at that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone's had some moment where they're uncomfortable, but they don't know. And, like, it's the same thing that we spoke about in the start. You're scared to say no. You don't know. You don't know how to articulate
you
it.
Want to be nice.
Yeah, you want to be nice. You don't want to be that person. So it is very, very, like,
yeah,
needed.
And it has to be taught by example.
Yeah.
I was sharing something with Kanak, in fact, yesterday, that, you know, I'm often told that I'm very ambitious,
mm-hmm,
and I'm too ambitious, or I want to do too much, and it never phases me.
Yeah.
And I know so many women, I'm surrounded by beautiful, talented women who are scared of their own ambition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's simply because when I was growing up, every time I said something that I want to do, my father would be like, my mother would be like, huh? Kar lenge.
Yeah.
You know, their response to any dream, anything, would be validating that, saying, yeah, great, that's amazing. Okay, let's do this. So how do we make this happen for you?
Mm-hmm.
Right? versus, you know, a lot of the outside people from my core, like my mother or father, outside of them would be like, aakhir to ladki ki jaat hai. Like, yeah. Do whatever you want. But at the end of it, you're a girl. You have to get married and have a family, mm-hmm. right? And that was never validated by my parents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? My father would always say, and now we have a conversation where my father would say, ye meri beti nahi hai, beta hai. To someone who tried to say that. Mm-hmm. Now, I've come to a point where I'm saying, but you know, even if I'm your beti, I have the right to be.
Yeah.
But he say, and he will have a conversation where he'll say ki, यार तब मुझे पता नहीं था कि हाउ डू आई लेट देम नो दैट लेट माय डॉटर बी तो मैं बोलता था कि बेटी नहीं है बेटा है राइट बट दोज एक्शंस एंड दैट इंस्टिलिंग दैट माय पेरेंट्स हैव हैड इन मी मेक्स मी एम्बिशियस एंड आई हैव टू गिव देम दैट क्रेडिट द फैक्ट दैट बोथ माय पेरेंट्स रिपीटेडली टोल्ड मी दैट आई व्हाटएवर आई पुट माय माइंड टू आई विल मेक इट हैपन एंड सो आई कैन डू इट बट सो मेनी पीपल आई एम श्योर वी आर शेम्ड फॉर एम्बिशन वुमेन आर शेम्ड फॉर एम्बिशन Women are told that, oh, now is the time for you to get married. Mm-hmm. I'm still single. My parents try to like set me up. They do. But it's not a source of shame for them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
For them, it comes that we don't want our daughter to not have a wholesome romantic relationship or a partner in life, right? It's not a source of shame for them. Yeah. Like even sometimes when I'm having a conversation with my mother and I'm saying, acha, and if I like a girl, and my mother will be, you know, it's a lot for her to absorb. And she will step back and she'll say ki, matlab theek hai. And she will not indulge in that conversation because she's still learning, right? I love my parents. They have shown me, they have set an example to me of how people evolve.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I feel so confident when I'm speaking empowered. About and empowered. We just did a video, like we do videos with my mom, where we did one video where she's explaining what I do for work.
Uh-huh.
And initially, like, even like PR or press is talking to me, they'd be like, oh, what do your parents think about you being an intimacy professional? Yeah, like because, and people like in the samaj, samaj only bolte na, samaj, society are asking my parents, and my parents are just so nonchalant about it.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, but you know, this is a niche. She's creating something new. It's so cool.
It is.
And when your parents do that, it gives you that confidence.
100%.
And which is why I think the training has to happen at the level of people of authority.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People who teach you, the people who bring you up, the nurturers, the authority figures, change their mindset. And I think as Brave Spaces, those are the kind of trainings we sort of want to create. And obviously, like, I know there are enough and more organizations that are doing good touch, bad touch, you know, consent for kids. I don't know how many are reaching out to parents.
Exactly.
Or, you know, college students and what it means, like, transitioning. And above all of this, this understanding of power. Mm-hmm. We don't really talk about power and how power plays into consent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, modules around that. So we are planning a lot of things.
Yeah. We're two ambitious human beings.
Yes.
Who keep coming across amazing, more ambitious human beings.
Yes.
And we keep spreading this word. So we do plan. And if we ever come across any opportunity, if for example, a school comes up tomorrow and says, ki humare liye kuch class, we will prepare a module for them.
Yeah.
Love that.
So we do plan to do that.
Yes, I love what Kanak. I want to just reinforce that.
Yeah.
That for us, it's always about if someone has a need, we'll make that happen.
Yeah. And I think y'all mentioned about moving away also from like intimacy coordinator and building like a society and a culture of talking about different things and like evolution.
So we're not moving away.
We'll never move away.
We'll still do intimacy.
That's the core.
Okay. But, so I want to say that it's not really, it's one of the things that we do.
100%.
Yeah. Intimacy work is always, because a lot of both our journeys sort of started from intimacy work, right?
Yeah.
And intimacy coordination, intimacy direction, you know, intimacy coaching. So that's always going to be something that we will continue to do. But what I think is, because that work specializes us in the entertainment arena, it allows us to expand in many, many ways.
100%.
Like crew trainings on vocabulary, right? gender sensitization workshops for production houses.
Yeah.
Right? The casting...
Casting,
you know, workshop.
Production houses. Workshops for casting houses. Right. Where... when they call, when they send for briefs for actors, what's the vocabulary that they are using?
Like we have Kavish, who's from On My K-Role, who always calls us in to like double check. Hey, you know, am I using the right language when I'm reaching out to? Can you just talk to, you know, my associates and tell them how to speak?
Yeah.
You know, how, you know, give them an understanding of gender and like sexuality and tell them the difference. And there are like... production houses like MA, they actively invite us whenever there's a you know, project, some conversation around gender, and then we get consultants on because it's also about passing the mic, right? Yeah. Like we can't, because we've studied this and we've, you know, invested and researched in this, we don't want to be the only people who are voicing it.
100%.
We actively try and bring in consultants for different projects that we do whenever there is. If I don't find a consultant in India, I will reach out like internationally and see what we can build out from there.
Yeah.
So I think it's also actively about like passing the mic. In fact, we hope that, you know, in the coming year, we want to train 2 intimacy professionals from marginalized communities free of cost.
Wow. That's right.
That is something like in a barter way where, you know, they work with us and therefore they get their training pro bono. Because right now I think most of us who are intimacy professionals come from fairly privileged backgrounds.
Yeah. I think touching upon the part where you spoke about like education with regards to gender, I think we had a conversation which again was like light bulb moment where y'all discussed the difference between sex, sexuality and gender. So if you could just briefly touch upon that. I feel like people don't realize that there is...
Yeah.
Kanak was the one who last time explained it to us. So Kanak.
Kanak, go for it!
So at a very, like, in layman terms, the way I had explained it to you the other day, the way Neha has explained, like Neha has devised this little body map. Yes. Of how to explain gender, sex and sexuality.
I've not done it alone. There's a friend of mine, Ishmeet.
Okay.
Who was... instrumental in sort of building this. A lot of like my interviews with people have helped me sort of explain it. So yeah, it's not fully devised.
So Neha and Ishmeet, they have devised this. So how we explain the difference between gender, sex and sexuality is that gender's here. It's what the society tells us. What how do we identify as...
Mm-hmm.
Sex is something that's between our legs,
mm-hmm.
which is basically biological.
Mm-hmm.
Sexuality is who we choose to love with, to fall in love with. So that is gender, sex and sexuality at a very basic level. And that's what I'd explain to them.
I think this is like the most simplistic way that I think we choose to sort of explain it when we are short of time and when we are trying to like... try and make that distinction. It's obviously much vaster than that. And we recognize that, right? But I do believe that gender is just a social construct, right? At a point, telling someone that this is your gender, nobody has any business doing that. So it should be something that I know. It is nobody else's to decide. And I think if... How do you define gender for people, right? Like I always say this, and I think something that really bothers me is we talk so much about sexuality, right? Everybody's talking about sexuality. Something that should be in people's bedrooms.
Yeah.
Right? But we don't talk enough about gender, which is something that is constantly imposed on you, repeatedly. Every time I like to say I'm gender non-conforming, but you dress, you're so femme.
Mm.
But you have long hair.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't seem queer. Yeah. How does someone else decide for me? When I... first started using they as one of my pronouns, she and they. Way before that, I was engaging with a lot of people who were from the queer community, and it was a struggle and a journey where everyone around me was expressing their gender and their sexuality so freely, but also repeatedly reminding me that, but you look so straight,
mm-hmm.
you know, or you're so femme. I mean, I wish, yeah. you know, you were queer. And I think a lot of that had built a lot of fear in me about actually saying that, no, there are days when I don't want to be identified with the idea of being a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have body dysmorphia, but I definitely experience gender in a different way than the women I know.
Mm.
But I constantly, even my sexuality, I think I constantly shied away from investigating it because everyone else told me that I looked normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm very grateful for my work and to IDC because I think the first time I actively advocated for my pronoun being they was at IDC.
Right.
I went to New York. I have a beautiful cohort and I have amazing mentors in Claire and Alicia, who are obviously the pioneers of the industry in the US, and Elizabeth and Lauren and some beautiful, beautiful, I can't mention all my 18 cohort yeah. members, mm-hmm. but that space allowed me expression in a way that I'd never been allowed before.
Yeah.
And I think coming back here and advocating for myself became easier after that. And then having people... shit.
What up?
And then having people like Kanak who actively choose to call me they.
Yeah.
It's really empowering. And I think nobody should tell anybody what their gender is. Because that's bullshit. But yeah, I think our narratives are constantly defining gender for us.
Yeah.
They're defining how we can look, how we choose to dress, how we should speak. And I think... Just a second.
No worries.
I've never really actively spoken about this. I think one of the reasons for starting Brave Spaces was this.
Yeah.
That we can advocate for a space that's... Because, you know, we can say spaces are safe, but nobody can talk of my experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to own my experience. And that's why Brave versus Safe.
Yeah.
So that everyone can own their experience, have their own agency on their expressions and their identity.
Mm-hmm.
And not be confined by power structures. But yeah, I think that's what we do.
That was very powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think about it as often.
Yeah. We had one, two other questions, but it felt like such a perfect place to end.
Yeah.
You can ask us.
I think
us.
Just quickly, we'll just go sure, through them, sure, but sure. I think this was a great thank you. Like, yeah, we feel privileged for you to...
So much for sharing that with us. I mean, we just, yeah.
I don't think it's said enough.
Yeah.
So,
and obviously, yeah, we can never speak for anybody's experiences, but even hearing or allowing to expose yourself to it, like, helps a lot, right? Like, yeah. It's just even having the conversations for us, like we said when we met, we didn't have so much context, but we want to know and we want to learn. And I think that was also one of the questions we had, you know, is when it comes to gender, if we double down on... Like, I don't know if you want to touch upon it, but even pronouns, you know, there's so much confusion with people, and it's just, if we were to be like now advocates after, you know, having this interaction with y'all, how do we go about it beyond, like, we've obviously discussed that, yes, everyone can educate themselves, but still it's so easy, I guess, because of social media or whatever, for, you know, people to be so polarized about it. But I genuinely like feel strongly about this. How do you then allow for that conversation or allow to have that impact, even though, like, we ourselves don't, you know, don't have that much education or exposure in this regard?
Mm-hmm. So I like to say this, that, you know, cisness. How do we know we are cis?
Mm-hmm.
Because we've been told.
Yeah.
We were born and we were told you're a girl, you're a boy.
Yeah.
Right? And we became cis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then queer people had to come to their non-cisness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ideally, we should all have to come to cisness also, right?
Yeah, yeah, we should.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right? The idea should be that you should gravity. Be nurtured as a gender neutral person. And then you say and express what is it that you identify. Where are you at your journey? And like, world over, there are people who are now, you know, setting example for gender neutral upbringing.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And that's... But... more often, it, sometimes for all of us, it's just about investigating our cisness.
Fair enough.
Right? And for me, it started with that. Am I really cis?
Yeah.
Am I really het? And that investigation meant so much more.
Yeah.
And exposing myself to environments other than cishet environments, right? And reading up. I mean, it is really ridiculous when repeatedly the queer community is asked to put in the emotional labor of explaining. There is so much Google, so much on Google. There is so much on in books, you know. Find, follow Alok Menon. That's like the easiest, right? Like,
absolutely.
there are graphic, you know, comics that come about, you know, gender and like feminism, or like just read.
Yeah. I just have like a small question I wanted to touch upon, because when we were doing our education, meaning looking it up and like, you know, trying to educate ourselves on the topic, something I personally felt was missing, where I couldn't get the right answer, was this conversation is normally only happening in English. So if, like, when we take it like Hindi, there are so many languages in India. Some Hindi, many people say, like, it's a very gendered language in itself. Like, you are putting a gender on like a thing. Like, Bharat is a woman. Like, how do you then have this conversation then across languages? I know it's a very heavy question.
It's actually so funny that Kanak came up with this idea where she wanted to do like more Hindi on our page.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, but, and so, also assuming since with y'all are doing workshops with crew and production and all of that, so I'm assuming that even for that you'd need to have, and I mean, again, like in India, it is a, it's needed.
It is also like with intimacy and consent work, and I say both because I'm going to go back a little, like two steps to that question also. A lot of our intimacy work, at least what I have understood in the last 1 year, is heavily, like the foundation is consent work.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we are going on a set and meeting our performers for the first time or in a workshop, we begin with them knowing that they can say yes or no at any point, at any given point. So consent work that way becomes like a very foundational conversation in our intimacy work as well. Now coming to this one, we recently decided, and sort of we've been still working around and playing with words, that how do we make this more accessible in our country, to our people. And one thing that's, I think, a big challenge, and we are opening, like at this moment, I'm going to take this opportunity and open it up to like everybody who's listening to us, if they can help us with this. Hindi mein na hamari bhasha mein shabdon ko bahut zyada derogatory sense mein use kiya jata hai. For example, body parts.
Right.
I could probably be using a penis and vulva, and they'll be just heard as body, like anatomically, scientific parts, body parts. versus if I don't know, I've not been able to find like the right or less derogatory terms in Hindi.
Yeah.
Because we've just sort of somehow corrupted our language.
Like all our you know, sort of abusive language comes from body parts.
I didn't even think of that.
It's so how do we like one of the things that I was in fact you know, when we were discussing that, how do we make this work more accessible, because right now everything is English, we're sharing in English, we're talking, which is why we did the video with my mom, because my mom explained it beautifully in Hindi, what is intimacy,
direction.
And she explained it, like I heard her one day explaining it to like one of her aunts, and I said, okay, will you do it for us? And she did it, and like and that's where this journey started of like, and sometimes I think it's it becomes about, for me, like when I'm trying to speak to someone and explaining where Hindi is more comfortable, it becomes about the process than the parts. In English, when you're explaining a choreography, I'd say, okay, so then the penis owner would move to the vulva owner, and they would be, you know, this would be, this penis owner would be the receiver. And that's how you would explain like choreography in terms of, but in Hindi, I will probably say, aap yahan aayenge, aap niche ki or honge, phir, you know, aap niche, upar ki or honge. It becomes more instructional, right? Rather than pointing out to specific parts, right? Like in English, when we train, we say anchor points, right? But like I would explain it saying that agar aap yahan jo aapka, and I would touch my body instead of touching the performer's body, right? And say, if you touch this area to that area, then, you know, it'll look more natural.
Right.
So making it more about the process than the body part itself has helped us so far. But yes, we are actively...
We're working on it also because I've studied literature. We had this essay in my final semester by Gugi Wa Thiong'o. If that's, I don't know if that's the right pronunciation. He's an African writer. He's written this beautiful essay called Decolonizing the Minds, in which he talks about how, despite so many years of being a republic, country or like a free nation, we're not really free, because even as we, all four of us right now, we speak here today, we're speaking in English. And English, Hindi hamari shayad matribhasha hai, par hum baat karte hain to aaj bhi wo hai ki Hindi, Hindi nahi pata hai hamari generation mein. That's just something something we're moving away from.
And why just Hindi? Like,
So Marathi, many other regional
Telugu,
languages.
Tamil, Kannada, you know.
Marwadi, I'm a Marwadi, but I can understand Marwadi, but I'm not sure if I can speak that well. And so many other languages.
So like for a they and them, like, do you think there is a equivalent in Hindi?
I think it's about... Hindi mein toh ek bahut beautiful cheez hai na, aap hum aur aap bol sakte hain.
We just had
we
this,
were discussing that.
Right? Like, that's what I was saying. Like, because you'd say, even if I say my name is Komal, mera naam Komal hai is neutral.
Yes.
Hum idhar aa rahe hai is neutral.
It's a myth that Hindi is a gendered language. There is so much, all languages. In fact, if you go back to tradition, mythology, whatever we know of history, we as a culture have been fairly gender neutral. And we have been very open. Like, we wrote the damn Kama Sutra. Like, I'm sorry.
So, that is something I've actually been... In fact, that is something it just crossed my mind a few days ago, right before sleeping. That how is it possible that a country jahan pe khajurao temples hain, humne Kama Sutra likha hai, wahan pe sex is a taboo. And I think it came from the from a session that we were having where they were training me, and we were talking about how rooted, why is it important, why is this movement important in India, and there were so many layers to it, and we were coming up with pointers and how culturally sex is a tabooed topic, and so much more. तो उसी वक्त मुझे ऐसे लगा कि I think I definitely need to educate myself more on this, that I don't believe that this is just something that the West has come Absolutely. Might have educated ourselves today from the West,
but
I'm pretty sure that in India also somewhere it's there. We just need to dig deeper.
It's actually colonial hangover that we have when we are being so binary.
Yeah.
Right? We are so binary in our experience of gender and sexuality. It's a colonial hangover. Because inherently, look at our gods. Look at our goddesses. Yeah. Look at the expanse of, you know, we worship nature. We worship kitne to matlab some. I'm not religious and whatever. But like 10,000 stories my mother tells me that every day some new mata is coming up. Right? Like there are, I mean, not to be disrespectful, but like my mother is deeply religious and I always hear some new god, goddess, whatever. And like, so I mean, if we are so expansive, then how is our idea of gender and sexuality so binary? It is not. When you say, I disagree when you say that Hindi or Hindustani for that matter is gendered as a language. Aap hum boliye. Hum, aap. Aaiye. Vartalaap karte hain.
Chaliye.
Kuch.
Guftagu
karte hain.
Tum is, like a lot.
Right. Where we're really, I think, decolonizing narratives around sex, sexuality and gender is a big part of the work that we will be doing at Brave Spaces.
Yay. This was honestly like such an enlightening conversation. It was a very important conversation, I feel, that we had, and we hope that people take something, everyone takes something away from this conversation that was valuable to them. But thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, we couldn't be more grateful, honestly.
Thank you for doing this. Yeah. I think it's so important to repeatedly pick spaces and create spaces that you're having these conversations. So your work is beautiful.